Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Maybe a few less road shows coming up in the new year, at least in January. We'll see what happens, but we're glad to be back here in studio. A lot to get to. We got some bowl games going on tonight. Former UNLV player Jade Maiava leading USC in a game later on against TCU. We're watching Tennessee and Illinois. We'll get into the CFP as the quarterfinals, the Elite Eight, start tomorrow with Ohio State and Miami. That was a weird one. Ohio State and Miami. Tomorrow, and then three games on New Year's Day. I wanted to start out with a little NFL / college football. I think I asked you this like 3 weeks ago, if you thought Chip Kelly would get right back into coaching pretty much right away. I didn't think he would land at Northwestern, of all places. Former NFL head coach, OC, just with the Raiders, had a good run at Oregon, decent run at UCLA. I mean, he 1,000% is sending the message he never wants to be a head coach again. So he's going to be the OC at Northwestern.
I mean, it makes sense to go back to college. He seems like much more of a college coordinator. I know there were some former Raiders and other former players in the NFL who kind of came out and ripped his offense as a college offense, and it only works in college. He doesn't adjust it to the NFL when he's in the NFL. So it makes sense to go back to college. Northwestern is an odd choice a little bit to me. I mean, it's a guy that went from Ohio State to the Raiders and now seems like maybe a step back and going to Northwestern, but it is the Big Ten, and you're living in Chicago, and he's got some money, so it's
right.
Nice.
I mean, he's already got enough money. I'm sure he's taking a little discount here, but a little discount in the Big Ten could mean he's making $1.4 million at Northwestern to be OC.
He's going
to
make whatever he's going to make anyway, because the Raiders are going to be paying him more, so this is probably just offset.
Do they have 2 years, a two-year deal with him?
I believe so.
Oh, my God.
Three.
Get out of here.
I think it was two.
Like two with an option at $6 million a year?
Yeah.
Holy crap. It's not as good as the buyout deals that college coaches get, but in the NFL, if you can get signed as a coordinator to a two-year deal at that kind of money, hello.
Like I said, I assume we don't.
I wonder if there's any offset language that if he goes and gets a job, because he could do. I don't know that we've talked about this on the air. You know that Kevin Kruger is working at Illinois,
yeah,
as an assistant coach. He was owed a little over $2 million after UNLV fired him. I'm pretty sure he signed on with Illinois for less than $100,000.
Yeah, and that's what Chip Kelly could go to Northwestern and say, hey, just pay me minimum wage.
What is minimum wage for an OC, though?
I'm saying.
You can afford $500,000?
$10.25 an hour.
Oh, okay, actual minimum wage.
Yeah, minimum wage. Give me minimum wage because it's just offset from whatever I'm making from the Raiders anyway. So,
sure.
Why not? Just pay me as little as possible and spend the money elsewhere.
If you want to watch the show, we're live up on ESPN Facebook and ESPN Las Vegas. There was news yesterday with the transfer portal. I don't know what the situation is at Northwestern. I would assume with Chip Kelly there, that's a big enough name that they'll be able to draw some players out of the portal to help them, especially at running back. I think he's a pretty good running backs coach, or pretty good coach for running backs, although there was a lot of buzz around Ashton Jeanty, at least people around Ashton Jeanty not being happy with the offense early on, and then changing his stance from the Michael Myers to whatever it was, back to the Michael Myers. Yesterday, UNLV had a quarterback go into the portal. Not, Anthony Calandria is already in there as a starter, but one of their backups, I would say, coming into this year, maybe the number three quarterback or number four, Gael Ochoa, a redshirt freshman, hits the portal again on Monday. He originally was a UTEP commit. He is from El Paso, so maybe that's where he lands. I'm not sure. I still think he has some upside. Today, the program announced that they'll get the right tackle back, Austin Boyd, who played as a true freshman, will come back for his senior season. And he was pretty solid at right tackle. And if anything describes a veteran, he's a veteran. So that's a good get. And those are the positions. I think the skill positions, the portal is really good. The O-line, man, it is really hard to get offensive linemen out of the portal. So if you can build and keep guys around for 3 and 4 years, that's a gigantic bonus for Dan Mullen's program.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not only it's hard to find them, it's better to have guys that are in the system and guys that have worked together before. It's not only just hard to find that individual talent, but certainly you can't recruit chemistry. You can recruit guys that you think are going to be good together, but you can't recruit guys that have worked together. in the past, and you know, have that built up, and that's very important on the offensive line. It's something that the Raiders have talked a lot about, of having some decent individuals, but if they haven't played together before, you just don't know how they gel.
Are you excited about transfer portal season?
No. I mean,
yeah, I love it.
It's the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing about college football. I you know, I'm mostly out on college football anyway. But yeah, I mean,
I love it. As someone who follows UNLV, I think it presents mostly upside. It gives you hope. And, I mean, anyone who wants to fight against it, yeah, a lot of it was the coaching, but they've used the portal to the tune of, like, 35-plus players each of the last three seasons. They've won 30 games. Like, they've never done this before. So, like, clearly the portal works. So you can't – last week when Calandria went into the portal, you might be sassed about the fact that he said he was going to stay, but you can't be mad at a system and make statements like, well, UNLV doesn't get to keep guys around. Yeah, they weren't winning before the portal. They're winning now. They're going out and getting guys to move up. I mean, I don't even know if Andrew Padrell, if that's a move up. He was at Montana State. But you get a guy like that, you get guys to move laterally. And most important, you get guys to move down from Power 4. They get playing time, and they had a really good receiving core this year. The last couple of years, they've gotten running backs from, what, Pitt, William & Mary, Penn State. I'm trying to think who else was on the Utah. You know, Jet Thomas is a homegrown guy. But they've benefited. I mean, I can name all the positions where they've benefited from the portal.
No, there's no question. It's just when you say you're excited about the portal, like I am out on recruiting. I'm out on portal. It's when the season starts, and you got the guys you've got.
Well, for you to follow it.
You better do a good job.
Yeah, for you to follow it was lunacy.
Yeah, you better do a good job with it. I mean, you better embrace it.
Oh, it can be a disaster.
Yeah. You better embrace it as a program. You better you know, go out and find guys. You better get better every year. You better be prepared. I mean, essentially, you plan, I think, going into the year that we're re-recruiting every single guy, and we're going out and if you're gone, then we got to go find somebody to replace you every single year, and that's how you're going to have to manage it for sure.
And it infuriates me that a lot of coaches hate it, openly talk about hating it, because I think a lot of it is they have to work now. They have to work a lot more than they ever had to work before, and they've got to actually be on top of their staff. Listen, I can't use this line enough. Generally, they're the highest paid employee in every state. Work. Work. We've all had to adjust. Work. Economy changes. Radio changes. College football changes. Work.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear it.
I think that's the biggest thing. And you know, they've had a lot of legacy coaches who just had their programs, and you go get your players, and you develop them, and 3 years from down the road, they're starting, and like my job's over. But now it's every year it's a new job, and that is something that a lot of people haven't done.
Jay up on social said, I'm a UNLV fan. This transfer portal is the greatest thing that ever happened. It ensures quality players come to play and don't sit. Yes, they may stay a year, but that year is more than we ever had. And if school and alumni choose to spend, they can stay. Small, less relevant schools went from no chance to some chance. It's all how you frame it. Sit at Alabama or play at UNLV. And if that sounds absurd, they actually have a couple of guys who were at Alabama at one point, or they did on this last unit if Jake Pope is back, and one of the wide receivers spent some time at Alabama and actually was key down the stretch making some nice plays.
Was that a random tweeter you put on there?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's former editor or sports editor of the Rebel Yell newspaper.
There you go.
Which is now the Silver and Gray Free Press, and I'm pretty sure I watched UNLV game this year with him in Providence, Rhode Island.
There you go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he does make a point. Now, sure. Now, there is a fine line, right? There is a fine line. That was answering someone who said, you know, if this player movement thing continues at this level and there's the rev split, right, the haves and the have-nots, fan bases will give up and will no longer be part of this collective fan base that have watched the CFP and the NCAA tournament. It might be 20 years away, but that combined with today's students feeling less connected to college athletes will be the downfall of it all. I don't agree with the last part. I don't think people understand folks under 30. They don't have connections. A lot of them don't have connections. I will go back to another line I use all the time. I think people your age and older, which I'm older than you, I think we're really uncomfortable with people changing jobs and changing schools every year because we're pansies and we didn't do it. Because we were taught, hey, loyalty matters. Does it matter? Does it matter? Or is every year in your life, right? Frankly, everyone looking at New Year's resolutions should examine what they're doing. And we all say we're going to do this, but we're not willing to change. These college kids, man, and the kids who are growing up now with college football, You think like 30 years from now, they're going to, you know, oh, this is so upsetting that the team is different every year. They're this is their life. Everything is different every year.
I mean, I think it's somewhere in between, because I do think that those things are true. But I think they're in very specific cases, like, say, quarterbacks or star wide receivers or something like that. I think that you do see what that, you know, second tweet was talking about. Fan base will give up, like, the quarterback thing. Like, I have younger friends that I watch games with, and they follow. Like, they are crushed about Calandria.
They are crushed. Okay. They're crushed. Yeah.
Just because they fell in love with him as a player.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, that's the guy. And I don't think they care who's playing offensive line or, you know, okay, the other positions, that sort of thing. But I do think, like, a quarterback like that who, you know, all of a sudden comes and is beloved and then is gone. Like, I do think those things hurt in the long run. I do. And I think they will hurt the programs and the game in the long run for fan bases.
Yeah.
But I do think it is closer to the second part of, hey, you understand it's a new team every year and you're going to embrace those guys. Those same people loved Haj Malik Williams. So, I mean, now they'll find a new guy.
Every day for the next 3 weeks, we're going to have talk about the transfer portal. Because it opens up on January 2nd. There's going to be guys going in before that. The 2nd is right around the corner. It closes on the 16th. They've made it into this free agent frenzy. They don't want a second period. So it's going to be freaking wild. More on this coming up. More on UNLV football and basketball. But we'll turn to Paige. Last night, man, the Golden Knights have had such a weird season. And last night was just, it was ugly. There was a bizarre penalty in the game. We check in on Tuesdays with Ryan the Hockey Guy from over on Fox Sports Radio.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's get into a little VGK. Let's get Adam Hill some headphones. We're always prepared here, big time radio. Ryan the Hockey Guy over on Fox is with us. Ryan, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Pretty rough game last night for the Golden Knights. So, you know, trying to figure all of that out and why they can't seem to find their footing until they're down by multiple goals in a game.
Let's take care of some business first, because you weren't on last week and we had a big announcement that you guys were moving. So tell people where you moved if they haven't been paying attention. I don't know if you want to talk about why there was a move, but I was listening yesterday. The signal at 94.7 sounds pretty good.
Yeah, we are over at 94.7 FM. 1340 AM stays the same, so no changes there in terms of the signal on the AM side of things. But 94.7 on the FM dial for all things Vegas Golden Knights, all things Fox Sports Las Vegas. And as far as I'm being told and as far as I know, it's a improvement to the signal in certain areas across the valley. So looking to improve, looking to get better. That's kind of the impetus behind the move.
Looking to improve, looking to get better. The Vegas Golden Knights. You said trying to unravel what happened last night and recent trends. So explain exactly what happened last night and why the Knights seem to get off to slow starts in certain situations.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the story of the season to a certain degree. When the Golden Knights start on time, they're fine. When they, you know, take a little bit of time to get themselves into the game, and I'd make the argument that last night they never really did get themselves into the game, they get into a lot of trouble. And you go back to the road trip up in Alberta, December 20th to December 21st, a 6-3 loss to Calgary, a 4-3 loss to the Edmonton Oilers. They were down by multiple goals against the Oilers in particular. They were down 4-0 early on in the second period before finding their footing and making a push. So, you know, you kind of look at the last five games for the Golden Knights. They've had really three games in which they have not started particularly well. And in those three games, they come away with 0 points. They don't get it to overtime. They don't get wins. And that's really been the story. If they don't start on time, if they're not ready to go at opening faceoff, it becomes harder and harder and harder for this team to pull points out of games.
They put a lot into the Colorado game, obviously, the other night. How much do you think the hangover effect maybe weighed into last night?
Yeah, I mean, to a certain degree, I think that you're disappointed with it, right? Because you look at that Colorado game, the Golden Knights without Jack Eichel, without Shea Theodore, no William Karlsson, no Aiden Hill, they were right there toe-to-toe with the NHL's best team in the league. And there's a couple of different reasons for it. I mean, obviously they wanted to try to make a statement without those key players, but you know, Colorado traveled the day of the game. That's part of that first game on the road after the holiday break in the National Hockey League that road teams have to deal with. And so I think the Golden Knights were able to take advantage of that early on in the game, built themselves leads, but you know, to a certain degree, I think you're disappointed. Even though it was an uphill climb for the Golden Knights in that game, you had two-goal leads throughout the game. You had a lead with 4 minutes left in the third period, and I think that the disappointment of not getting that game across the finish line is probably the thing that bothers them the most. So does it bleed into Minnesota? Maybe, but Minnesota's a team that's right there in terms of how good they've been to start the year with Colorado. I would think you'd use that as fuel to just go out and try to have a strong performance against Minnesota, and it didn't happen.
You got to see that Colorado team play. Obviously, the Knights had a chance to win it, but you mentioned some factors there. Even though the Knights are shorthanded, the Avalanche were just coming off their break, traveled the day of the game. After seeing them, why don't they just stop the season and give them the trophy?
Because rarely does a team go through an entire 82-game schedule playing the way that Colorado is right now and then go through an entire two-month postseason run and win the Stanley Cup, right? Like, you think back to a couple of years ago, it was the Boston Bruins that were on pace to have the best regular season ever, and they did. And then they lose in the first round to the Florida Panthers in shocking fashion. So in a lot of ways, you look at Colorado, there aren't very many holes. They're relatively healthy, and they were so much better than the Golden Knights in the third period when they really found their legs and dialed up the pressure. But at the end of the day, you got to go through a playoff run. You got to go through beating four teams in a best of seven series. And just because you're the best team in the regular season, it doesn't always mean you're going to be able to get it done in the postseason when it matters.
Ron, the hockey guy, part of UGK Insider Show, he is the show, is up with us here on this Tuesday. We're talking about where the Knights are right now in this season. Analyze the play of Carter Hart.
Well, it was really good early, right? Like, I think that probably better early than a lot of people anticipated it would be. Certainly had some big moments. You think of that game against Chicago in overtime where Hart was exceptional, and then you go on that East Coast road trip. I thought he was really good against the Rangers. And then you look at the last couple of games for Carter Hart, right? Like, you allow 5 goals to Colorado. Again, it's Colorado. You understand it. But I think, you know, going back to him against Minnesota, I don't think anyone was particularly good in that game, but a couple of goals on Hart last night where, you know, he just wasn't really sharp, didn't get to his spots on time, a little off the angle. So I think it's been mostly good, but, you know, I don't know about the idea of starting Hart 4 games in a row like the Golden Knights had done just previously. So I'd like to see a bit more of a rotation with him and Akira Schmid, maybe 2 games for Hart, 1 game for Schmid, to just keep both guys fresh and give a little bit more rest and recovery for Carter Hart as he's trying to figure out his best kind of rotation coming off of that absence.
Ryan, the hockey guy's with us here on ESPN Las Vegas. A local content creator asked this question: are the Knights playing harder for Schmid than they did for Hart? Are the players protesting the Hart signing now?
No. I don't think that anyone's playing any harder for whatever goaltenders. And this is not new to Carter Hart or Akira Schmid. I mean, this has been a conversation point, quite frankly, since the beginning of time for the Golden Knights. It was, they play harder in front of Marc-Andre Fleury, then it was harder in front of Leonard, then it was harder in front of Subban. Like, it's one of those things, right? So, no, I don't think players actively play harder in front of different goaltenders. Akira Schmid, he's excellent in relief. Like, it doesn't matter the circumstance, it doesn't matter how many times it's happened. Like, when you pull your goaltender and Akira Schmid comes off the bench, he doesn't allow goals. He just doesn't. I would make the argument at this point that Schmid has been, in some capacity, the MVP of the Golden Knights season because he has played really well. through difficult circumstances without Aiden Hill, through that stretch where you couldn't play Carter Hart, Akira Schmid was the guy that was collecting points and winning games and giving you saves and giving you an opportunity. So in a lot of ways, I think that there's a calmness to his game and more consistency to his game. So I'd like to see the starts continue for Akira Schmid until Aiden Hill is healthy and ready to go.
What are your thoughts on the call against Tomas Hertl, the major call, listening to postgame with you guys with Duva? He didn't sound like he was exactly buying it. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's a major. Like, I mean, listen, it's not a lot of contact. Obviously, Hartman's in a vulnerable position, but he turns into the vulnerable position, kind of puts himself in that spot. And if there's no blood on the play, like I firmly believe if there's no blood on the play, if Hartman doesn't get bloodied, Tomas Hertl's got a 2-minute minor for boarding, and he's in the game the rest of the way. And if that's the case, if that's the benchmark, especially when there's a lot of different ways you can get cut in that scenario, I don't think it warranted a major penalty.
I always like to close out with a general question about the NHL and hockey. So I saw a good tweet the other day that was, I guess, well thought out, but also very trolly because it covered every sport, so it'd get people all worked up. Some dude was complaining about college sports, and they may go to a super league. We've talked about that a lot. You know, you may just say, hey, the big leagues in college football, it's only 50 schools. And this person said, college football has adopted the worst elements of nearly every major sport. MLB, payroll disparity. That one works me up. I could do a whole dissertation on that. That's nonsense. But said NHL, irrelevant regular season. Is the NHL season, regular season, irrelevant?
I mean, it's not irrelevant in the sense that, like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, because you have to go through it. I do believe that, to some degree, the regular season becomes such a drag, such a slog, that, and there's so many games, that, you know, you don't always get the clearest picture or the best understanding of what teams actually are. And then you start to add in the extra points, the overtime losses, the shootout losses, and you can have a lot of teams that are buoyed by that, that find themselves in positions, whether it be making the playoffs, whether it be in a playoff race, that can change the dynamic of the league going into the trade deadline and really down the stretch. So I think in a lot of ways, the way that the point system is in place right now in the National Hockey League, it can allow teams to believe a little bit more that they are actually in the running when they're not. It keeps everything closer, as we're kind of noticing across both conferences right now. And I think it becomes a little bit more difficult to really determine who the elite teams are, what that next level looks like, and then everyone else is just kind of deluding themselves into believing that they're one or two wins away or a win streak away from making the playoffs. So I would make some changes. I'd adopt a 3-2-1-0 point system, so every game is worth the same amount of points. And ideally, I'd love to see a cutback on the amount of games in the National Hockey League's regular season to make individual games a little bit more meaningful.
Ryan, great job, man. Have a good New Year's. I know you're working tomorrow, so make the best of it. Preds are in town to take on the Golden Knights. We'll talk to you, buddy.
All right, appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Ryan, the hockey guy. Ryan Wallace over on 1340 and now 94.7 FM. All the VGK coverage you can handle. I don't know why I say it like that. Like, I can't handle anymore!
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
2 minutes away from talking to the host of the Autumn Windbags podcast. Lots to get into with the Raiders. A lot of drama off the field. What an exciting weekend coming up, right, with the Chiefs in town as they're in full tank mode. Last night, the Rams, I mean, had every reason to go out there and win that game. And
did they?
Well, that's a good question down the stretch here. On the Falcons side, I'm going to save the Falcons for the big four, but Rams lose. Is it pretty clear that they're missing something with the energy vampire out right now? That they just don't have the balance on offense that Davante Adams was giving them?
Maybe. I think motivation, too. I mean, they were eliminated right on Sunday, so not eliminated from the playoffs, but from...
There's no seed to play last night?
From a seed. I don't think 5, 6, and 7 aren't that much of a difference. They had been eliminated from winning the division, getting the number one seed overall. They played guys. Obviously, Stafford played, and he's still kind of playing for an MVP potentially. And you have those sorts of motivations. But I think a lot of times when you, you know, feel like you're going to be playing for one thing and then that's not on the table, sometimes that affects you. And then they fall behind 24-3 and they rally and they had a chance. And they were a Puka incomplete pass ruling. On what would have been the greatest. It was the right call. But yeah. On what would have been the greatest.
It was unbelievable.
Maybe the greatest catch in NFL history.
And we saw, there was a couple weeks ago where Brock Bowers made one like at his feet when Geno Smith, I think, was trying to throw the ball away. And he snatched a touchdown off the ground. That weekend had like three NFL and a college play that were unreal by receivers. And Puka last night then reinvented the wheel. That was insane. Going out of bounds with his outside hand, one-handed catch, and just, I mean, it's like horizontal with the ground.
And just, there was a slight, you know, separation from the hand, the one hand that was on it. Just, it was absolutely remarkable. And it would have gotten him out of bounds and in field goal range. I mean, it was, they could, there was only one thing they could do, and they were able to somehow do it just barely. Now, the play before, obviously, was pass interference that should have been called. They should have had, you know, a play from like the 10-yard line to try to score, but didn't. And then Puka nearly made one of the greatest catches in NFL history, and that's what it took to beat them for the Falcons, despite having a 24-3 lead. Not a safe lead for them, obviously, in history. But yeah, it was a fight for the Rams toward the end of the game. They almost got back it. They didn't, which, you know, changed not really much for them, but did change for the Raiders potentially in sealing a spot for them in the top two of the draft and knocking the Falcons and Jets, your sad Jets, from those ranks of competing for that top spot in the draft this week.
This part of the show is brought to you by William Hill Sportsbooks. Ray Cleaver is going to join us in about 40 minutes. We'll go behind the counter with him, but you want to get into what's going on with the CFP. They've got their parlay boost are up. We'll get into some specific scenarios with Ray in about 40 minutes. When you download the William Hill mobile sports app, you haven't used it before, you get up to $250 in bonus bets. Then you can bet anywhere on the go in the state of Nevada, the iPad, the tablet, or your Android or anything else you love. But being mobile and being able to bet and bet in-game is a lot of fun, and you can make money. So give it a try. William Hill, mobile sportsbook. Download the app now.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Time to get into the Raiders. Yesterday, I was melting down over the whole Max Crosby thing with the Raiders. We'll get into that a little bit. Two NFL spots today. Lots of NFL coming up. More UNLV basketball and football as well. Some MMA here. RJ Clifford is with us as 2026 is right around the corner. What's up, RJ?
Happy draft season, Cofield. How you doing?
I'm fired up, man.
There's a game left.
Draft season's already here, and this week is very, very scary. Some scary things have happened to the Raiders in the past. Before we get to any of that, you celebrated Sunday. Did you actually drink a malt liquor? Did you go for a Colt 45?
So our listeners at the Autumn Windbags, they're really our listeners, and one of them asked, like, if every loss this season was a booze, which one would it be? And so I'm like, well, what do you celebrate after like having an 80% chance? Now it's not done deal yet, but an 80% chance of getting the number one overall pick. Like what's, you know, you're not popping Cristal, but like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, there's like, didn't Colt 45 have like an energy drink or something? I could have sworn there was one of those. So I didn't find it, but if it was around, I would have drank it. And as cheersing to number one overall draft pick.
Come on now. Live the life. Be dedicated. Make the effort.
You could have gone with the Mountain Dew one.
Mountain Dew. Oh, is that red something? Or
yeah,
they are good.
It's a
sweet as hell, but they're good.
Yeah, it's quite a shock to the system.
They'll knock you for a loop.
It's like, which version of battery acid do you want to inject? Is basically what we're going after.
Okay, so let's talk about what's going on with the Raiders, because while I was ready to wake up on Monday and be like, "Hey, they're finally doing the right thing. They got it right." I think most of the fans get it. And then we got to deal with this Max Crosby stuff all weekend long. Give me your initial thoughts on going back to Friday on Max getting annoyed that he's being sat down, shut down for the season, and he storms out of the facility, and Pete Carroll's like, yeah, I understand why you did that. You do?
So I have been one of the biggest defenders of Max Crosby throughout the last half decade for a couple of reasons. I mean, if there's anybody that has a right to point out, complain, vent about how inept the Raiders have been the last half decade or so, it's Max Crosby. I mean, he's living it. He's doing everything he possibly can. One of the best defensive players in the league. I swear, I've been saying forever, like, he'd have like two Defensive Player of the Year awards if the Raiders defense was even remotely decent, let alone good. It's just everyone around him has just been so bad for so long. He gets double and triple teamed every play, and still he's effective when missed players in football. Like, if he, like, some people just need to vent, Cofield and Adam. Sometimes people just need to, like, just get it out. This was the first time where I said, okay, what was the point of that? Like, that's not venting. That's, you know, storming out of the facility, little passive aggressive posts, the video of him shooting basketball at his house. It's like, what are you accomplishing? Like, this isn't venting. This isn't just like going home to your wife and saying how bad, you know, work was today. This was intentional and it served no purpose. Now, I'm 42. I get that social media for guys in their 20s is different. Like, everything goes out there, but it doesn't seem to have caused a big problem with the team. Like, there's been no real like backlash that we've seen publicly from any players, but this was the first time I was like, this wasn't Max just being frustrated and trying to like get something out. This was him being conniving about it. And it bothered me.
Don't you also lose the ability to complain about the ineptness of the team when you are not helping the team get what they need, which is a number one pick?
Well, and this is where I think like Pete Carroll's obviously playing politician with how he's describing it, but at the core of what he's saying, in a bubble, what he's saying is correct. Like, Max's job, and Max needs to be selfish a little bit, like, his job is to be the best player he can every single play. That's how he gets paid. That's his legacy. Like, he wants, you know, the extra stats and sack numbers and pressures and all the things that come with it. Like, there's, you know, there's some selfishness there as well, but that's his job and he's paid to be that guy. So I've been listening to you, Adam, the whole time, and I'm with you where it's like, Max, if you want to win, a first overall pick is a great way to get us there. And you not playing is going to help us get us there. I get like you're and everything you're saying is correct, but it's hard to turn that off if you're Max Crosby. And there is, and obviously the personal selfish reasons as well.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, there is also is a chance that this is all just a show. It's like, okay, I get it, but I need to show my fans that I'm really mad. So just tell everybody I left.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. I mean, that would probably explain why the teammates aren't, you know, maybe instead of getting mad, they're just rolling their eyes as well. You know, when you go to Jay Glazer, I think that's kind of where you're going for, yeah. Right? Like, when you go to Jay Glazer, like, Jay Glazer is like pretty tight with these players, like almost too much. So I think when you're trying to do something like that, Glazer's the guy. He's the call you make.
Will you be devastated if they win on Sunday and somehow let the Giants still have the number one pick?
Yes. That would be shocking. That would be absolutely shocking. Like, the Chiefs, like, they gave the Broncos all they could handle last weekend. Like, they're still, even on their third string quarterback, like, they don't turn off. Like, it's still an Andy Reid coach team. They're not used to this. Like, the Raiders, they're used to being eliminated from the playoffs by Halloween. The Chiefs aren't. So, I think like the gas is still on the pedal as much as it can be with Kansas City. But that number one overall is just so valuable. Now, I look at number two or number three, depending on how the draft plays out, you'll still get a lot of value there. But there's just, let's say the Raiders do trade down, you have all 31 other teams. Any player you want in this draft can be yours if you give us three firsts or whatever. Like, that's something special. Have the Raiders fumble that away on the week 18 would really suck.
And aren't the Chiefs too smart of an organization to, they know that. They don't want the Raiders to jumpstart their rebuild.
I just think that like, what would Andy Reid do here? Like, how many players would Andy Reid have to put on IR to lose to this version of the Raiders? Like, the Giants, as bad as they are, their entire secondary was like practice squad players. And still the Raiders couldn't get a passing game going. Like, suit up the Chiefs cheerleaders. Maybe they'll lose to the Raiders. I don't know what the Chiefs would have to do that wouldn't be comical to lose to the Raiders. And maybe I'm jinxing the whole thing. And if I am, I'll take credit for it. I'll take the blame for it. But, God, just this, like, the depleted Chiefs still almost beat the Broncos. And this version of the Raiders still lost to the second worst team in football by double digits.
RJ Clifford, you can hear Autumn Windbags podcast breaking down the Raiders, also our MMA guy. But Travis Kelce, last game, he could play quarterback.
Huh. Wildcat him for a little bit, right? Like have him have some fun. And that's the other part too, right? Like, is this Travis Kelce's very last game ever? Like, is like, I know, obviously every, this is the type of season where maybe he would think about retiring. Like, would he want his very last game to just be a throwaway or not really play because the Chiefs want to keep the Raiders from having the number one overall? I mean, there's a lot of factors on how the Raiders would have to beat the Chiefs.
ESPN Las Vegas here on Tuesday. RJ Clifford is with us. Back to Max for a second, because part of the Glazer tweet and report was basically, hey, this could affect the Max Raiders relationship moving forward. Amy Trask tweeted out something pretty interesting. She said, I love you, Raiders fans. I always will. I believe it to be unlikely Max Crosby will seek to leave the team, given his business relationships with Tom Brady and Jim Gray official that extend beyond the field. She described this as alleviating some concern. Actually, that statement brings up a lot of concern for me.
probably for you, Cofield, as an independent observer of the Raiders, but for Raiders fans, they're like, oh, thank God, whatever it's like. If it really takes like some business relationships to keep Max around or keep him happy or keep him from being frustrated, then so be it. But yeah, I mean, look.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. One, how much power does Jim Gray have? Two, are decisions being made on roster moves based on business relationships? Because that is a dangerous path to go down.
Well, it is, but the sad thing is it's probably better than what's happening now. Pete Carroll's basically doing a Make-A-Wish Foundation for his family and friends. Let's get Tyler Lockett another season. Let's give my sons some games. Let's get Geno Smith another $40 million. Like that's what it's been so far, right? Like if it's a Tom Brady decision and it's like, hey, maybe the business can help a little bit. Like, I'm with you, Cofield. Like in a black and white perfect world, and if this were a super well-run organization that's just littered with championships and playoff appearances the last 10 years, there'd be like any sort of like tiny bit of indiscretion I'd be concerned about. But it's been the dysfunctional Raiders. And it's kind of like pick your poison. Like Mark Davis has let every fox into the hen house that's out there, right? It's like if it's Tom Brady that's the fox, that's kind of better than what's been happening.
MMA note to close on. I know every year, you know, the shows and the blogs will do, and this is in every sport, let's wrap up the year. Let's give out some honors. MMA Junkie had a comeback fighter of the year. Candidates included Jan, I can never say his first name correctly, Volkanovski, St. Denis, Tony Ferguson, but the winner was Macy Barber. Do you agree with that?
Not at all. Not at all.
Wow, I mean, okay.
No. I mean, I think Macy's the feel good story in some ways. Like pulling out, like when you pull out of a main event minutes before you're supposed to make the walk. I don't know. Like it's hard to come back from that for me. Like that's just such a like your opponent's just left there with their hat in their hand. The entire like people, like, all the fans are just like, I was waiting for a main event, and this is what we got. I mean. That's a real tough one for me. The Tony Ferguson one's kind of funny. Like instead of being, like, you're not making the comeback in MMA, but you did it in other random combat sports. But I guess the W's a W. I think that one's fun.
I'd like to give the overall fighter of the year to Anthony Joshua. Now, sadly, we got this terrible story that came down the last couple of days Joshua and his camp. So we'll see when he's going to get back out there. I wanted to get adamant on this one. I think I ran this by you last week, RJ, that the next step for me for Jake Paul, Adam, I think he actually should get another championship fight down at his weight class because I think it'll be a worse fight for him than it was against Joshua. Let's have someone move up from 175 to fight around 190 or have a 190 champion fight him. Let's go.
I don't want to see any fight.
You're just done?
Yes. Yes.
I'm not done, man. I really well, enjoyed the Joshua fight.
Somehow he didn't get beat up bad enough for me.
Yeah.
So I do want to see him, you know, punched in the face real hard again. Put him in slap fighting. I don't care.
RJ, break the tie.
I want him to do the last thing in the world that he would do.
MMA.
I want him to fight like an 8-2 cruiserweight, like the number 47th ranked guy in his weight class, who's probably around the same record, and just see how he is as a boxer. Like that's what I want to see, which is literally the last thing in the world Cofield he would do. Yeah, there's no circus match about it.
He's never gonna do it.
You'd rather see that than MMA?
I'd like to see some MMA for sure. Absolutely like to see some MMA. If that's on the table. But I mean, I don't think PFL can afford them.
We got to close here with it's not necessarily a resolution, but a 2026 wish. And I thought of something that you've been doing recently, RJ, that may be good for Adam. Adam, you've got lots of money. You could probably put something in your house, install something in your house. RJ, can you talk about the virtues of your sauna? Adam came in today. He's very stuffed up. Mm. I think it would do a lot for him. It would clear him out every day. You know, the nasal drip would go bye-bye. You love this thing.
Oh, it's a game changer, Adam. I mean, I heard you on your last podcast with Vinny just snorting in the background, fighting all these allergies. You got a cold, flu. Like, your mic is too good. Your mic is too good. I heard everything. But, dude, like, especially with, you know, we talked about what bottles we would celebrate with. Whatever I drank last night, I sauned all of it out in 45 minutes. Clean as a whistle. Dream you right out. Telling you, it's great.
There you go. Sauna. There we go. I would buy you one for Christmas, but you get mad that you have to reciprocate, so, and exactly. I can't afford one. If I'm getting a sauna, I'm getting it for me first. Sorry, man.
That's fair.
All right, RJ. We appreciate your wisdom. Have a good New Year's. Be careful, and then sweat it out on New Year's Day.
Yeah, drinking man's best friend. 180 degrees. Thanks, boys.
There you go. He swears by it. RJ Clifford. RJ Clifford MMA up on Twitter. Also, the Autumn Windbags podcast. I have stumbled onto something that I really enjoy. I wasn't a big liquor store attendee. I would go to some of the big box liquor stores, but I'm finding a lot of the liquor stores around town because I really fell in love with the Club Tail. It is just really junky, fruity drinks. I'm getting yelled at home every time I bring one home. But I've discovered the latest scam, and I feel like this is what they do in certain neighborhoods. You know, you go into some liquor stores and it'd be like, no cash, no cash. It's all card. And then you get charged on the card, and you're like, wait, why is there an extra 35 cents on here? If I can't give you cash, why am I being charged for using a credit card? I got no option.